This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. During the 1970s, Norman Lear's shows were appointment television. When All in the Family or The Jeffersons or any of his other programs were on, you made it a point to be in front of the tube that night. At their peak, his shows were viewed by 120 million people a week. And they were groundbreaking for the time, dealing with serious issues such as racism, poverty, and abortion, yet still leaving audiences with a good laugh. Norman Lear remade TV culture from the ground up. He joins us this afternoon to talk about his book, Even This I Get to Experience, which recounts his life, career, and the extraordinary shows and characters he created. Norman, thank you so much for joining me today.
You are so welcome. Happy to be here.
Even This I Get to Experience, how did you come up with that as the title for your book?
Well, actually, I had there was a moment in my life when I kind of went broke. Everything, this is after enormous success. I had a real tough time, and I was on the phone with a son-in-law, and he said after a meeting in which I learned I was in terrible trouble, he said, "Well, how do you feel?" I said, "I feel like crap. Are you kidding?" He said, "But something keeps running through my head, and it's, even this in a lifetime I get to experience." So the next morning he calls me like 7 o'clock in the morning, and he says, "You once said you wanted to be cremated. You got to promise me we'll bury you." I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Because someday I want to take, your grandsons, my sons, to a stone that reads, 'Even this I get to experience.'"
Wow.
And so that stuck with me, and that's the way I feel. Look at this. I'm on the telephone with you. It's taken me 93 years, some months, some weeks, some days, to get to this moment on this telephone call. That's pretty special.
Well, you're best known for all the amazing sitcoms that you produced in the 1970s, but you also had a military career, didn't you? You served in World War II.
I did. I flew 52 missions in World War II.
What else did you do? What else was part of your military experience?
I trained with a 35-millimeter gun and radio equipment to become a radio operator and a gunner. That was my life in the Army before I went overseas.
Now, after the military, what did you start doing?
I always wanted to be a press agent because I was a kid of the Depression. There was only one uncle who ever flicked me a quarter. He was my role model. I wanted to grow up to be an uncle who could flip a quarter to a nephew. And he was a press agent. So that's as close to show business as I could. It happened. I didn't even know what it was at the time. But when I came back from Italy, I flew out of Italy. I wanted to be what he was, and that was a press agent,
or what we would call a publicist.
I became one, and that led to writing.
Okay, so that's how you got started in your writing career. Well, after you did your work as a press agent, where did you go from there?
It was an accident of fate that Danny Thomas was playing a club. I got him on the phone. He was looking for new material because he was playing before a showbiz audience and they knew his stuff. And I pulled a prank and got to him and sold him a 3-minute story. The next day I got a call from somebody who was in the audience. And 2 days later, I was in New York writing for Jack Haley, who was doing the Ford Star Review at the time. And boom, I was a television writer.
You pulled a prank. What was the prank?
Oh, I called his office on the lunch hour and pretending to be a writer from the New York Times, who had just spent 2 days with him. I was sure on the lunch hour he'd be out of lunch. I'd have the secretary. I wouldn't get him. And so, she had to give the number to the guy in the New York Times who wanted to call him. He had two more questions. He was at the airport going to write the story on the plane and file it when he got to New York. So she gave me the number. I called him. He laughed when he heard how I got the number. and we worked it out.
Well, let's see. There was All in the Family, Good Times, Maude, the Jeffersons. Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman, which by the way, Norman, was one of my dad's favorite shows.
I love hearing that, because Mary Hartman, I adored her.
it was different. I'll say that. How many shows did you create in your career?
I don't know. Including the shows that never made it, or shows that were on for a couple of, you know, a few weeks and were gone. There were over 100.
Wow. Does it surprise you how, and looking back, are you surprised how prolific you were and how successful, you know, your shows turned out to be?
Well, you know, you have to understand me was we. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of collaborators in these shows and a lot of people who were necessary to make it successful. So I was running a great group of talents, and it was we who got these shows made. And, you know, as I answer these questions, it occurs to me the book is such a pathway for young people or anybody who wants to get in the show business and wants to write for television or so forth.
Yes.
It's because it took an awful lot of ways to make things work and to get there, to get behind the door.
You know, your sitcoms were such a big change from the sitcoms of the 60s, because you were taking on social issues and political issues in what you were doing. When you set out, did you originally intend to do social comedy?
When we set out to do it, you know, I'm a serious fellow. I see the foolishness of the human condition. There's something funny in no matter what is going on and however tragic. And I grew up in a family where lots of that was happening. So there wasn't a topic that we undertook that wasn't occurring in a neighbor's house or down the street or something we'd read in a paper. It was life. Now, life also included the roast is ruined and the boss is coming to dinner. That was the nature of problems and shows that preceded what we were doing. But, you know, the economy, racial problems, you know, problems of the ethnicity and health issues and so forth, were just the stuff we all lived with. So that's what we tackled.
Yeah, speaking of life, Norman, how much did your family life shape the characters that you would later create in your sitcoms?
A lot of them. I mean, Archie and Mike had a resemblance to my father and me. Edith, I had a number of aunts who added up to an Edith. And this is true of all the characters. And it's true that the, you know, other writers and contributors to the shows, it's true of people in their lives. And I think that's why they resonated, because I don't know how many thousands of people have told me through the years that their dad, their uncle, their grandfather was Archie.
Yeah, you're right about it resonating, too, because my cousin and I think we were 10, 11, 12 around the time that All in the Family came out, and we were hooked on the show. Here we were, these you know, kids, basically, but we enjoyed the show because we could relate to it, and we could see a lot of similarities to people in our own family, so I think you're absolutely right about that.
Well, that's what made it work. People related to it because they'd lived it. I love what I hear, and I hear it all the time. We gathered as a family to watch the shows. And, you know, of course, there were only three networks at the time. There weren't, and there was largely one television set of the house. Now you got a television in the living room and in each of the bedrooms. Yeah. And in the kitchen.
And 500 channels.
And then you've got the cell phone.
Yeah. Now, All in the Family launched your TV career. And, you know, here you have this show about Archie Bunker, who you were talking about earlier, a guy who, you know, despite the fact that he's a bigot, he has a likable side to him. And then you have his wife, Edith, and you have his liberal daughter and son-in-law. And it makes for some very interesting interactions between the character. And it really was such a different show for its time. How tough was it to get this show on the air?
Well, it was difficult. It was not just difficult to get it on the air. That took 3 years. But episode by episode, the network resisted this and that. And most of it I reflected on as silly. It was silly to say that Archie, sees his son-in-law and daughter running down a flight of stairs because they didn't know that Archie would be coming home, and they were preparing to make love. And Archie says, 11:10 of a Sunday morning. And the network wants that out because they think really? It's causing the audience to think specifically. So, I mean, that's as silly as it sounds. And I thought, well, give in to silly once and be ruled by silly from then on.
Now,
I just couldn't live with that.
Yeah. When the show debuted, CBS was pretty nervous about it, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had an advisory on ahead of it.
Really?
You know, warning people that they were about to see something that they might be distraught about, or, you know, wrong for their children or whatever, and advise them, you know, watch with caution.
Oh, my gosh.
But that lasted 6 weeks or so, and then they took it off.
Didn't they set up a phone bank to take complaint calls the first night, just in case they got up?
Yes, they did. They had a couple of hundred extra people on the phone to take those calls, and the calls never came.
Yeah.
But that happens with the establishment and the American people all the time. Somebody once said, nobody ever lost money underestimating the intelligence of the American people. And that's baloney, just not true.
Now, tell me about Carol O'Connor, who played Archie Bunker. Could anyone else have pulled off that role as well as he did?
Well, you know, once you see the show, you know the character's utterly indelible. People have wished to do a current version of it with the character. There is only one Archie Bunker for me. That face, that Carol, that, you know, magic. I couldn't think of another.
How was it working with Jean Stapleton, who played Edith Bunker, Archie's wife?
She was... Jean Stapleton was a glorious woman. And I was fond of saying, because I had said it the first time reflexively, when somebody said, what is Jean Stapleton like? And I said, well, she is always where she is. And reflecting on that, I thought, what a wonderful thing to be able to say about somebody. She's always where, but that's the way she was. If she was talking to you, she was no place else. Whatever else might have been going on in her life, she was with you.
Now, besides your work in the entertainment world, you founded the People for the American Way. Tell me about that organization, why you started it.
Well, I was concerned in 1980 with the proliferation of television ministries. You know, the Jerry Falwells, the Pat Robertsons, the Jimmy Swaggerts, they were proliferating across the tube, mixing politics and religion. And as I understand our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, you do not mix politics and religion in our country. You do not insist that somebody is a good citizen or a bad citizen, depending on their religion. And People for the American Way, I don't wake today, 30 years later, I don't wake up that many mornings, read a newspaper, and not thank God the organization is there.
Well, didn't Jerry Falwell at one point accuse you of bringing filth and perversion into America's homes with your sitcoms?
Yeah, and he wound up saying calling me the number one enemy of the American family in our generation, which caused, some young guys somewhere to threaten to kill me, but to threaten so threateningly, everybody around me insisted I have protection.
Wow.
Until they found him, and they did.
But yet, here you still are. You're still going. Like you said, even this get to experience.
Well, I hope so. Here we are.
Yeah. A lot of people from my generation, Norman, grew up on your show, so I'm just curious how it makes you feel that you had such an influence on an entire generation.
You know, I don't think a lot about that. I love that I contributed to other people's pleasure, made people laugh. At the same time, I was being made to laugh. You know, I'm convinced that the amount of time I've laughed has added time to my life. So working your ass off and laughing your ass off is as great a recipe for longevity as I know.
Yeah, like they say, laughter is the best medicine, isn't it?
I think so.
Well, Norman, it's been such a pleasure talking with you today.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. And I hope you sell a lot of books today. even and in this interview, even this, I get to experience. How about that? I'm sitting in Chicago and I'm talking to you, and it's glorious.
Thanks, Norman.
Have a good life. Thank you.
Norman Lear, his book is Even This, I Get to Experience. Coming up, what's the possibility of a real-life Star Wars? This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.